Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. In November 1981, President Reagan delivered what he considered to be the most important foreign policy speech of his administration. Before the members of the National Press Club, he called for a number of things: the elimination of all intermediate-range nuclear force weapons, known as the zero-zero option, and he called for a meeting with the Soviet Union, then Brezhnev, to negotiate due reductions in their mutual stockpiles of long-range strategic nuclear weapons. But just weeks before this speech, he had given final approval to blueprints for a multi-billion dollar modernization of our strategic forces, to build 100 B-1 bombers to replace our deteriorating fleet of B-52 bombers, to deploy new Strident nuclear submarines, to develop the stealth bomber, and to build 100 new intercontinental range missiles known as the MX Peacekeeper. All of this because the president believed,
"During the late 70s, I felt our country had begun to abdicate its historical role as the spiritual leader of the free world and its foremost defender of democracy. Some of our resolve was gone, along with a part of our commitment to uphold the values we cherished. While the Soviets had built new warships, missiles, bombers, and other weapons, we had done nothing to modernize our strategic forces. As the foundation of my foreign policy, I decided we had to send a powerful message to the Russians that we weren't going to stand by anymore while they armed and financed terrorists and subverted democratic governments. I wanted peace through strength, not peace through a piece of paper. In my speeches and press conferences, I deliberately set out to say some frank things about the Russians, to let them know there were some new fellows in Washington who had a realistic view of what they were up to and weren't going to let them get away with it. At my first press conference, I was asked whether we could trust the Soviet Union, and I said the answer to that question could be found in the writings of Soviet leaders. It had always been their philosophy that it was moral to lie or cheat for the purposes of advancing communism. I said they had told us, without meaning to, that they couldn't be trusted. I wanted to let them know that in attempting to continue their policy of expansionism, that they were prolonging the nuclear arms race and keeping the world on the precipice of disaster. I also wanted to send the signal that we weren't going to be deceived by words into thinking they'd changed their stripes. We wanted deeds, not words. And I intended to let them know that we were going to spend whatever it took to stay ahead of them in the arms race. We would never accept second place."
And so, in today's podcast, we'll focus on the president's resolve to get the MX Peacekeeper funded by Congress. In the first half of the podcast, we'll listen to a question and answer session with reporters on the production of the MX missile. And in the second half, we'll listen to his radio address delivered to the American people on the same subject just a few days later. Let's start with the question and answer session.
"We're going live. We just need 10 more seconds." "Go ahead, Mr. President." "Huh? Well, we may be late when we get there."
"Yes, they told me that I could just tell them to go when I was ready." "Well, this morning I met with a group of leading Republican and Democratic senators to discuss the future of the MX Peacekeeper missile. And I'm pleased to report that we've reached a bipartisan agreement that we hope will preserve funding for the missile and enable us to continue the restoration of America's defense capabilities. In recent days, it's become apparent that many members of Congress agree with my assessment that production of the Peacekeeper is in the national security interests of the United States. At the same time, however, they want to take a closer look at the question of how to base the missile. The agreement we've reached today is a reasonable balancing of those interests. All of us who met today pledged that in the next few days, we'll work with others in the Senate and with members of the House to secure full congressional assent to this plan. In closing, let me reaffirm my very strong view that the United States needs to move forward with an effective land-based missile, one that will not only enhance the prospects for a secure America, but will also strengthen the hand of our negotiators at the arms conference and the arms control talks in Geneva. The world in which we live is uncertain at best, and we must be fully prepared in order to protect our interests and defend the cause of peace.
What is the plan?
That was the first hand was up right up there.
Does that mean Denspak is dead? Have you agreed to forego Denspak, to reevaluate base hand?
No, and let me straighten something out on that whole thing. First of all, our first proposal was with the MX that because they don't all come out of the oven at the same time, there is a progression as they're made, that the first certain number that came off the line simply be placed in Minuteman missiles while we continued to work on a basing mode, because there was great disagreement about the original concept of the previous administration of the racetrack idea and the 4,000 shelters for 200 missiles. We're building, we're only asking for 100. Congress decided against the idea of placing any of them in manned missiles. And so we continued, and the Defense Department continued with a study of various methods that of basing them. And finally, the one that, as I've said before and used the expression, that came up with the least warts was the Denspak system. So we, and Congress had also asked that by December, we come up with a recommendation. So we came with that recommendation. But I have made it clear to them all the time that the important thing is to let us get started with the production of the missiles, because there's going to be a considerable delay in getting them. And if there had been no opportunity, we simply presented the plan, no opportunity to debate or discuss with the Congress on this decision. And so we said, we're perfectly willing to sit here, if you'll let us start making the missiles and discuss with you, negotiate, and see if there's any improvement or better plan. And that's always been our position.
Mr. President, what's the compromise? You haven't told us anything about where is the compromise and who was involved.
Well, the compromise is going to involve... Would you like to explain what the compromise is, John Tower?
The compromise is simply this, that the funding for production of the MX missile would be retained in the bill, but would be fenced. And the bringing down of the fence would be contingent on two things. The president is required to resubmit a certification of his selection of basing modes, along with information on alternative basing modes. Then the Congress would act under expedited procedure within 45 days of the submission of the certification to approve the basing mode recommended by the president or any alternative they might select. But it would require affirmative approval of both houses of Congress under expedited procedure, so it could not be filibustered.
Mr. President, do you have any...
Mr. President, let me just ask you this. The Soviets have made it plain that if we build, they'll build more missiles. Can this really lead to any kind of arms control, do you think?
Yes, it can, because participating in our meetings has been General Rowney, who's home. They're taking an interlude here at in the arms negotiation talks. And he has spoken of the impact that this has had and the seriousness of the negotiations that the Soviet Union is willing and is negotiating. And the thing is, this is not in the sense of a bargaining chip that somebody could say, well, you're building it just to tear it down. No. We need a modernization. Even if we get the reduction of arms, which we're seeking, and which there has been some indication that the Soviets are seriously considering, this would not be the missile that would be taken out of circulation. We need to modernize to catch up with the five generations of missiles that they have been developing, while we have stayed static and have not improved in the last 15 years in any of our missiles. We do not match them in accuracy. We do not match them in megatonnage. This is a missile that is comparable to their big missiles, their SS-18s.
Is there any promise in the reported Soviet offer to cut in half their intermediate missiles now aimed at Europe and Asia? Does that give some promise that maybe they're moving?
Well, I think the very fact that they made a proposal to reduce in numbers reveals that they, too, are concerned, and they became concerned when NATO asked and we agreed to provide comparable intermediate-range missiles, of which there are none now in Europe, as a deterrent to their use of the SS-20s. And so the very fact that they have volunteered, it isn't adequate, and it would still leave us at a considerable disadvantage.
More about the MX peacekeeper missile in just a moment. The president always put his best argument to the American people, so you won't want to miss this.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story of the MX Peacekeeper. President Reagan defined the urgency of his strategy in an address to the people 40 years ago, on November 22, 1982.
I might add that the defense share of our United States federal budget has gone way down, too. Watch the blue line again. In 1962, when John Kennedy was president, 46%, almost half of the federal budget, went to our national defense. In recent years, about one quarter of our budget has gone to defense, while the share for social programs has nearly doubled, and most of our defense budget is spent on people, not weapons. The combination of the Soviets spending more and the United States spending proportionately less changed the military balance and weakened our deterrent. Today, in virtually every measure of military power, the Soviet Union enjoys a decided advantage. This chart shows the changes in the total number of intercontinental missiles and bombers. You will see that in 1962 and in 1972, the United States forces remained about the same, even dropping some by 1982. But take a look now at the Soviet side. In 1962, at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Soviets could not compare with us in terms of strength. In 1972, when we signed the SALT I Treaty, we were nearly equal. But in 1982, well, that red Soviet bar stretching above the blue American bar tells the story. I could show you chart after chart where there's a great deal of red and a much lesser amount of U.S. blue. For example, the Soviet Union has deployed a third more land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles than we have. Believe it or not, we froze our number in 1965 and have deployed no additional missiles since then. The Soviet Union put to sea 60 new ballistic missile submarines in the last 15 years. Until last year, we hadn't commissioned one in that same period. The Soviet Union has built over 200 modern backfire bombers and is building 30 more a year. For 20 years, the United States has deployed no new strategic bombers. Many of our B-52 bombers are now older than the pilots who fly them. The Soviet Union now has 600 of the missiles considered most threatening by both sides, the intermediate-range missiles based on land. We have none. The United States withdrew its intermediate-range land-based missiles from Europe almost 20 years ago.
By December 1982, 1 month after this address, he decided to take his argument to the American people. Let's listen.
A few weeks ago, I talked with you about our quest for peace, for a secure world in which our children and our children's children can grow up without fear, enjoying the blessings of peace and freedom. As president, my first duty is to do everything in my power to achieve these goals. Two of the keys to preserving the peace are deterrence and arms reduction. One of these keys has worked perfectly for 37 years. Since the end of World War II, we've prevented the outbreak of a new global war by a national policy of deterrence. To do that meant maintaining our defense forces so that any enemy knew in advance that an attack on us or our allies would bring disaster, not victory, to the attacker. Now, when a potential enemy knows that by starting a war, he'll lose more than he hopes to gain, he just won't start a war in the first place. That's what deterrence is all about. A key feature of this policy has been to maintain strong strategic forces. Our triad, as it's called, our three-legged plan of land-based missiles, sea-based missiles, and manned bombers, makes clear to any aggressor that if he attacks us, we will still have the strength to strike back, the ability to retaliate. That's because no potential attacker has the strength to knock out all three legs of our defense triad at the same time. If we only had two parts to this force, then preserving the peace would be more difficult. Potential attackers might even come to believe they could launch and win a nuclear war. We must never let this happen. That's why last year I ordered all three legs of our strategic forces to be modernized. There's no question about the need for modernizing them. Today, all three are made up mainly of weapons we developed more than 10 years ago, more than 20 years ago in the case of our bombers. Sooner or later, older systems become ineffective and vulnerable. Our most pressing problem today is that the Soviet Union, because of its massive buildup of nuclear weapons, could destroy virtually all of our land-based missiles in a single nuclear attack. If we do nothing to correct that situation, we will have weakened the chances for peace. This is why we need the new MX Peacekeeper missile, to help restore our strategic deterrent and literally to keep the peace. The Peacekeeper is a modern missile, and it is survivable. I agree with my scientific and military advisors that the closely spaced basing plan we've proposed will work. Congress had ordered us to submit a basing proposal for the MX by December 1st, which we did. However, we're prepared to review this matter with the Congress in the new year. The basing mode is not an issue. There's plenty of time to decide on that. What we need now is a clear, positive vote on the missile itself, to go forward on production of the missile. Why? Because we're negotiating with the Soviet Union at Geneva to reduce substantially nuclear arsenals on both sides, the other key to protecting the peace in the nuclear age. These are tough negotiations, but our team is hanging in there. However, if we just cancel the Peacekeeper, the MX, if we say we won't deploy it, we remove a major incentive for the Soviets to stay at the table and agree to reductions. Look at it from their perspective. If we're willing to cancel a weapon system without getting something in return, why should they offer to eliminate or reduce weapons that give them an advantage over us? In 1977, my predecessor sent his Secretary of State to Moscow with a proposal that the Soviets reduce the number of their heavy SS-18 missiles. At the time, we had nothing comparable to the SS-18 and no new missiles to deploy. The result was what you'd expect. The Soviets refused to even consider the proposal. I can't believe the American people want to make that mistake a second time. The stakes are just too high. Without the Peacekeeper, we weaken our ability to deter war, and we may lose a valuable opportunity to achieve a treaty to reduce nuclear weapons on both sides. With it, we make progress on both paths to peace. On both counts, there's no doubt that we need it. In the weeks ahead, we'll continue to bring the facts to you, the American people, and your representatives on this vital issue. We've already done it in hearings before the Senate. I only wish the House had given us the opportunity to do the same before it voted last Tuesday to cut funds for the Peacekeeper missile. It's hard to make a good decision before you've heard the facts, and in my opinion, the House of Representatives voted without really considering the facts. As we present our case for the Peacekeeper missile to you, I hope you'll keep in mind that by continuing to maintain our ability to deter attack, we make it less likely that the horror of nuclear war will ever occur. And by keeping our defenses credible, we offer the Soviet Union a realistic incentive to reduce tensions and agree to significant and verifiable arms reductions. These are vital objectives, but I can't achieve them without the support of the American people and the United States Congress. To protect the peace, we must provide the funds necessary to offset the enormous Soviet military buildup and restore a military balance, particularly in nuclear weapons. And to achieve the arms reductions we want, we must give the Soviets the incentive to negotiate. We must go to the bargaining table in a position of strength, not weakness. My fellow Americans, with your continued support for a strong defense and for the Peacekeeper missile, but only with your support, we can achieve both of these crucial goals. Thanks for listening, and God bless you.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.